Welcome to Martinis and Your Money, the podcast about living a better life one cocktail at a time. I'm your host, Shannon McLay. I'm so excited you're joining us today. We're going to have a lot of fun, so let's get started. Hello, Martinis and Your Money listeners. Despite the fact that I'm divorced, I'm actually very optimistic about relationships and their long-term potential. As I've shared on this show, money and a lack of transparency around it was certainly an issue in my marriage and an issue I see in a lot of relationships. And that's why I was really excited to talk to Lisa Zeiderman, a family law attorney and partner at Miller, Zeiderman, and Whitaker, about ways that people can divorce-proof their relationships. After dozens of years of seeing all of the ways that people can financially handicap their relationships through various divorce negotiations, Lisa shares some great insights for how you can let money enhance your marriage and not let it lead to the downfall. And now here's Lisa. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thanks, Shannon. I'm so excited to be here.
I am so excited to have you on. I'm sure not a lot of people are excited to talk to divorce attorneys, but I am very excited because I actually just did a recent show about divorced men and women and managing your finances. But I love your take on it about divorce proofing your relationship. So I think it works all around. So can't wait to chat about this. But before we do, what are you drinking with me today?
I am drinking my iced skim milk latte, decaf, with a half a shot.
Oh my goodness. You're one of those people at Starbucks.
I am definitely one of those people, and my husband will not even order a coffee for me.
You're that girl.
I am that girl. In fact, when I order it, he turns away from me so he doesn't have to see it.
Yeah, like, I don't know her. I don't know who let her in.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness, that is so funny. I am kind of like that in my Starbucks order, which is why I love the app so much, because it's like you don't have to say it out loud and you don't have to worry about them figuring it out. And I do have people who won't order my order for me. So I get it. I'm with you, Lisa. Mm-hmm. So I'm but I love calling you out on that. I'm drinking coffee at home. I actually just moved and I got divorced a few years ago, but I was living in the old house that I was living in. Now I'm in the new place and kind of feeling like I needed some changes. And a lot of my old coffee mugs were just connected to my ex, and or I didn't really feel connected to them. And I know this is a weird thing, but this is just how my head is. So I got new coffee mugs and I'm just loving this one. Is it says "Hello Gorgeous" on it, and it's a whole bunch of pineapples. And I really relate to the pineapple in me. I had a friend of mine years ago say, "You're kind of like a pineapple because you're like rough on your exterior, because you know, you have to be tough businesswoman and like you're kind of no nonsense, but like you're really soft and sweet in the middle." So
I love that. And I love that you're actually disconnecting from your mugs as well.
Yeah.
Because that's a very big issue. And I tell people often when they're arguing for some of their personal property, mm-hmm. that these may be things that you may not be interested in having later.
Yeah.
And so maybe don't have that particular argument. Maybe move on at the time when you're dividing up the property.
You know, Lisa, that is such a great point. I didn't really fight for any of the property. I kind of got, I'm using air quotes, stuck with it because I got stuck with the house. And I mean, it's not nice to say I didn't really get stuck with the house, except that's the house my son was living in. And I didn't get stuck with my son. I wanted my son, but I had all the stuff in it. And in the process of moving, it was like, it's funny. I just felt like I was not connected to any of it anymore. I think because I had so much connection in the marriage that it was like, I just didn't feel connected to pretty much most of the stuff that was in that place.
And I think that that's what happens to people over time, although they feel very connected to the property at the time of the divorce. And sometimes we spend a lot of time and money arguing over things that have either sentimental value to people or that they just want because they want it.
Yeah.
And that is not probably the most efficient way to deal with a divorce in terms of your finances, because you're spending a lot of fees on something that really you can just part with.
Yeah, it's like sometimes it's just that you don't really have a reason for it. I actually give my ex and I a lot of credit in that we actually did most of our negotiating together without the attorney need. And we just kind of came to an agreement on stuff. We were both pretty good about the stuff aspect of it. But I know, yeah, people waste a lot of money on that. But before we get into that, tell me, listeners, a little bit about you. What made you decide to become it's not a divorce attorney, you're like a really family attorney, but like, was that your path? Did you always want to do it? How did you get to this point?
So I was in the fashion business.
Oh, okay.
And I went into the fashion business basically when I was 18 years old, and then started my own business, and then went through my own divorce, and decided that I really wanted to help other people going through their divorce. And so at that point, I closed my business in the fashion industry and went to Fordham Law School, and then, I'm sorry, Fordham undergrad actually first, and then Fordham Law School. And my passion was to become a family law attorney. And that's what I ended up doing.
Yeah. So you had a whole other career. And how old were you when you got divorced, Lisa?
So I was divorced at about 26.
Wow.
And actually, I wasn't. I was married at 24. I was divorced about 32.
Okay.
32. And went through a very difficult contested divorce. And then came out on the other side and said, I can really learn from this particular experience, and wanted to help other people go through that experience as well in a better way. And that's what I essentially hope to be able to do and to continue to do.
Yeah. So did you have any reservations about being that far along in your life and going to school, college and undergrad and law school for the first time?
So I didn't. I thought that it was a new start. I think being in your 30s is young. And I came out of law school as approximately 42 years old. And I also felt that I had a lot of experience in life at that point, and that that was a very helpful tool to become an attorney and to start on my next career. So I felt that the ability to pivot and to do something different was there for me because of my life experience. I'd always negotiated and worked with people and helped people get through negotiations. And so I felt that a lot of those experiences being in the fashion industry were experiences that I could use at the negotiation table in a matrimonial context.
Yeah, I love that, Lisa, because I think a lot of people think, 30, and that they have this fear of pivoting at really any point in their life, especially the later you go into your life and career. It just seems like, it's impossible. But I totally agree with you. Having just turned 40, I feel like 30 is totally young. And I think that people can pivot at any point. So I love that you pivoted and you have a whole other career now in family law. And I actually totally agree with you. I think there's different, you think about a college student, usually the quote traditional path is that you do your undergrad and then at 22, you start law school and you graduate law school at 25. And I think especially for matrimonial law, and I'm sure there's other areas of law or family law, but I can't even imagine a 25-year-old doing it. I can't. You talk about life experiences, and I truly feel like you need life experiences to work in this area of the law.
I think the more life experiences you have in this area of the law, the better equipped you're going to be to help your client. So I have a 25-year-old daughter now, and I've been through my own divorce, and I've been remarried, and I also am certified as a financial divorce analyst, and I have learned that finance is so important as I've gone through my career, and that how to deal with different issues that come up in life, which I think you're correct. A 25-year-old doesn't necessarily have that background and that insight to be able to do that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Before we kind of get into the specifics of divorce proofing your marriage, we have people listening who are thinking about, I know I have a number of listeners who are in that transitional stage of their relationships and thinking about divorce and speaking to an attorney. What do you think that somebody should look for when picking an attorney? And do they need an attorney to go through a divorce?
So I do believe that you need an attorney to go through a divorce. And I say that because I think that even if you are an attorney, you need an attorney to go through a divorce. Why is that? Because I think it's a very emotionally charged experience going through a divorce, and you're not always thinking clearly and without emotion. And I think that you need somebody who can advocate for you and think ahead and also think without the emotion that you might be feeling at that moment. And I think an attorney is that person who can do that for you. In terms of what type of attorney, first of all, I think you have to find an attorney that you feel is going to watch your back, essentially, and an attorney who is going to be responsive, an attorney who is going to listen to your concerns and take them into consideration and advocate for you and be able to work with you in an efficient manner and essentially bring you to a place where you have closure and an agreement or a conclusion that is at least fair. And I say at least fair because I think sometimes there are ways to actually work with somebody that you try to get something that really works for your situation.
Yeah, I think whenever there's emotions involved, you have to beware. And there's certainly nothing more emotional than a divorce. Well, I always think marriage, kids, you know, those are highly charged areas. And I agree. I actually, my ex, he had the attorney and we were agreeing on most everything. So I was pro se on my side of it, but I did end up getting a friend, an attorney friend to review it for me. And there was one area where I was like, because I was the one who asked for the divorce, I was like, at first giving up my rights to his retirement account. And she pointed that out to me. She's like, why would you do this? Like, I know you know, you want to be fair and whatever, but like you're entitled to this. And I ended up, you know, having it revised and I put that in. And I was glad to have another person say that to me because it was a highly emotional decision for me. I was feeling bad for wanting the divorce that I was like, I just didn't want to make it worse. But yeah, she was like, you have to also think about yourself. And I think that's hard too. Yeah.
It is hard. I think that one of the problems is for people who are representing themselves is that sometimes, and even when they're working with an attorney, sometimes they want to just get it done. They want to be out of it. And so they're not necessarily thinking about what the ramifications are of getting it done. Also, someone may feel guilty for some reason, for something that they believe that they've done during the marriage, and therefore they are more willing to give up something that they really shouldn't necessarily be giving up. And then there's the issue of attachment to certain items, such as even the marital residence. That's something that sometimes people get very attached to the marital residence, and it may not be something that financially they should be taking on. But they're attached to it because of children, or they're attached to it because they've lived there for so long and they're not able to necessarily see that it's not a financial burden that they should be taking on. And it may not be actually a financial asset for them to be keeping that actually is an asset. In fact, it may become a liability to them.
Yeah, that is. It's so funny you share that, Lisa, because in the week before this episode, I share all my financial dirty laundry. Yeah, with my listeners. And because we just sold the marital home and I kept it for the first almost like 2 years after the marriage because of my son, because I was like, oh, okay, you know, we're divorced now. I don't want him to lose his dad in the house and the house. So I wanted to keep the house for my son. And it just got to the point where I was like, what am I doing? I can't really afford this. So finally I did that. But yeah, I think, again, the children are highly emotional and you make these financial decisions, and a lot of a divorce is a financial decision. And you make these financial decisions for emotional reasons. And I kept that house because of my son. And, you know, and I think that my lesson learned for that and why I shared this with my listeners was that, you know, I think we don't give our kids enough credit and we have these, you know, fears of doing wrong by them or whatever. But I truly believe at the end of the day, our children want us to be happy and financially secure and above them having to make a change in their life. So
I think that's true. I think also if you can stay in the same area as your children are growing up in, if they can maintain some of their friends, if they can be at the same school, there are other ways to keep them safe and emotionally stable. And it's not necessarily taking on a financial burden that's going to add stress to you that helps them. And I think people really need to understand that there, because at the end of the day, you're also taking on costs that you might not otherwise have, such as broker's commissions when you actually sell the marital residence, because if you would have done that maybe during a divorce, you would be splitting a broker's commission. You could be taking on capital gains taxes that might not necessarily be your burden, but could have been divided if you were doing it during the divorce. Repairs, all sorts of expenses that people just don't think about, that they are now in it and they realize, well, maybe I shouldn't have fought so hard to keep that residence. And I think it's more important, in my view, and after seeing clients who go through this, that the parent is not so stressed and strapped financially.
Yeah, I totally speak from experience, you know, that I did that. The plumbing had a plumbing issue. It was an $800 issue, and I was the one in the home. So I always feel like everything's a lesson learned. So anyway, I appreciate that you share that and you see that from your experience about some of the decisions we make in the divorce. But let's talk about, let's not even leading up to divorce, right? Divorce proofing your finances. I love when you reached out to me to talk about this, because I am a divorced woman, but I actually know that there are a number of things that I did, especially financially, that probably could have prevented this. And I see this with clients too. And I want to talk about this topic and your thoughts about finances, divorce, and how we can create healthier relationships, I think, so that it doesn't lead to having to worry about hiring you, right?
Exactly. That's exactly correct.
Yeah. How do we prevent you from having less business, Lisa? How do we do that?
So the first thing I would say is, before you get married, you sign a prenuptial agreement.
Okay. I totally agree. Can you say, yes, share this, because I totally agree with you. And we advise this all the time. Share why, Lisa.
So the first thing is that everybody knows going into the marriage what they're going to get when they come out of the marriage. It's also a place to learn and share information about finances. So we see a lot of people who come to me and say, I know nothing about my spouse's finances. And had they signed a prenup, one of the things that they would have done during the prenuptial agreement process is they would have shared information about their finances, what they each had at the time of entering into the marriage, and then also what their incomes were. And they may have also had discussions about what they would do if they had children, who would stay home with the children, if anyone, if the plan was that both spouses were going to work, how they were going to divide up tasks within the marriage. All of those talking points are part of the prenuptial process. And so people go into a marriage when they have a prenuptial agreement, I believe, much more in the know about their finances and going in and knowing what they need to do for themselves to keep them financially sound.
Yeah, I totally agree with this. What I say about the prenup and why I feel like everyone should think about it is that when you're about to marry somebody, you're at the all-time happiest of your relationship, right? You're like, I'm going to spend the rest of my life with this person. And you're the most optimistic. You're in the best frame of mind in your relationship, truly. And that's the time you want to negotiate, right? And talk about the end, because that's like, you know, it's the most, I think, the happiest place to negotiate from, versus when you're talking about a divorce, you're usually at the lowest point in a relationship. And like we talked about earlier in the show, like the decisions you're making aren't necessarily the best, but you're in a really negative place because it's ending, and you usually end up spending a lot of money in lawyers' fees negotiating things that you could have saved money on by agreeing to early on. And the other thing I always say too is you really get an idea of who you're marrying when you go through this process, right? Because if they don't want to give you, you know, if you both don't feel generous or agreeable in how you're going to split your assets or how things are going to work when and if something should happen between the two of you early on, then what kind of person are you marrying, right?
I think that's true. I think that's absolutely true. I also think that it becomes a discussion about how you're going to manage your finances throughout the marriage. And so many times I have young couples and even couples in their 30s and 40s who have children or are going to have children who want to have one parent, for example, stay at home, mm-hmm. and one parent with the children, and one parent will be more of the, you know, the person who is out there working and building a career. And what I always say, unfortunately, right now, is that the world of alimony and spousal support is not very kind particularly for people who aren't working throughout the marriage, and you are giving up significant time during the marriage to get your career on track and to move it along. And so that's one of the concepts that I think people can talk about when they're entering into a prenuptial agreement and figure out how someone is going to be on par in the event of a divorce, if one person is staying home and making those sacrifices. And if that isn't what everyone wants, that's a good topic for discussion before you get married, right, so that you know what you're getting into. I also think you're right that this whole idea of this is the person you're marrying, and does this person want to be generous and fair with you? And does this person want to protect you? These are good lessons to learn before you actually say, I do. And a prenuptial agreement will tell you a lot about who you are marrying.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I for me, I said that's probably the most telling thing. And do you think that people need an attorney for a prenup?
I do think people need an attorney for a prenup. I think that people need an attorney because, again, attorneys can look forward. They are forward looking. They can see what the issues are going to be down the line for people who are perhaps just getting married for the first time and have no idea what the situation or the law may is, and also what issues may come up. And frankly, there is statutory language that is necessary for prenuptial agreements, and people should know and have that in their agreements. And so it's important, I think, if you're entering into a contract with somebody, that and a prenuptial agreement is a contract, that you have an attorney who at least is going to review it and offer suggestions and help you to think about what some of the issues may be.
Yeah, I actually love that. And like you're saying, like your attorney who's going to help you with the prenuptial agreement is usually like you have seen how it works out on the other end, and you're going to think through these challenges that could potentially arise over that period of time. And I think some people will be like, oh, I don't know about spending that money. But again, my argument is spend the money now and a prenup, and it'll actually be less money than you're going to spend down the road should something happen, because it's already all in place. And, you know, with hopefully less hours involved, less attorney hours that you're having to pay for up front. I have a client actually who was marrying somebody with, had, you know, family money, and she was given a prenup agreement that was just, you know, generated by the husband's family. And she was like, you know, I'm going to hire an attorney to look at this. And it turned out a number of things were like not legal in the document, you know, like, or she had rights that were just not addressed in the document because it was a one-sided document. And you certainly want to make sure you're protected, especially if you're getting that prenup from somebody else.
Exactly. And you also want to make sure, particularly if you have separate property, and when I say separate property, premarital property, that you may have bank accounts, stocks, houses, apartments, et cetera, that if you want to protect those assets, this is the place to do it, is in the prenuptial agreement. And people who are, I think, more and more getting married for the second time need to protect those assets if they want to do so in a prenuptial agreement. And this is the place to do it. And that's why I think you really do need an attorney. I've seen people who sometimes who come to me and they have what we call commingled their premarital assets with their marital assets and lose millions of dollars that they could have had in a divorce because they didn't actually have the advice of an attorney before they got married and didn't enter into a prenuptial agreement.
Yeah, I certainly think if you're bringing assets to the table, you have to look at protecting them. Again, I understand, like, if you're marrying somebody and you're going through that process, you don't want to think about the end of that marriage, but you have to be realistic too. That, and I tell people all the time, the day I got married was still, it ranks like one of the happiest days of my life. And on that day, I truly never thought I would get divorced. I really was like, he's it for me. This is it. I never even saw it as a possibility, but you know, you just never know how life's going to unfold. And so I think, you know, it's just, again, investing early on to not have to pay down the road.
Exactly.
Martinis and Your Money is brought to you by my company, The Financial Gym. I'm frequently asked by companies to sponsor this podcast. And while there are many great companies out there, I can honestly say that none are better than mine. I lead a team of amazing people who literally work nonstop, all in the pursuit of helping their clients achieve their hopes and dreams. At the Financial Gym, we provide one-on-one financial training or financial accountability. Our financial training model is based on my work as a financial trainer for the last 5 years. We have a 90% success rate of our clients achieving their financial goals. And I would say that all of our clients would attribute their success to the accountability and support of their financial trainer. In early 2018, we opened our beautiful headquarters in New York City at 134 West 25th Street on the second floor. And by early 2019, we will be opening gyms in cities across the country. If you're in New York City, I hope you'll stop in and join us for our weekly Wine and Learn Wednesdays, or try one of our group money tribes. Or if you're outside of New York, you can work with my trainers remotely or join one of our regional money tribes sprouting up across the U.S. So go to or send friends to financialgym.com to find out more today. What are other ways, Lisa, that people can not end up on the divorce table?
So they could also sign postnuptial agreements.
There we go.
So we do have a number of people who come to us who want to stay married, but they also want to protect themselves during their marriage. And they didn't end up signing their prenuptial agreement, but they want to make sure that they are protected now that things may seem a little rocky and maybe they're not so sure that they're going to stay married, but they want to give it another try, essentially, and they want to be able to work on their marriage. And so those people can enter into what are postnuptial agreements, which essentially spell out the finances of what the finances are now, and then what will happen with those finances when and if the marriage was to end. And hopefully, again, people who, to your point, who are in a place where they still want to try to be together and are working on their marriage will be able to enter into this postnuptial agreement in a generous and fair-minded way. And that's a good thing to do. Now, you have to be careful also on the other side of that, that somebody is not just doing that in order to get a better divorce settlement on the other side. You have to make sure that everybody really is being fair-minded and really does want to enhance the marriage, and that this isn't just a way to plan while somebody is feeling a little bit more generous. So that's one caveat to entering into a postnuptial agreement.
What do you think are some of the biggest financial mistakes that you've seen with people either in their marriage or leading up to the divorce agreement that you feel like people should be on the lookout for?
So one thing that I always say to people is that opening the mail, it's a simple task. I can't tell you how many people come to me and they don't open the mail. They don't look at the bills. They don't look at the credit cards or the bank statements. They have no idea what monies are being used for, what monies exist. And if they went to the mailbox,
yeah,
they would actually know what was what. And I think that that to me is the biggest mistake. I always say to my husband as we're going down our driveway on Saturday morning, I'm going to stop and get the mail because it's a random day. And I trust my husband. We've been married for 20 years, but it's a random day and I'm not home usually to get the mail. And so I go to the mailbox and I pull out the mail, and it's always a bit of a joke in our household. And I open all the mail and we're sitting in the car and we're about to go to breakfast and I'm just opening the mail. But I feel like then at least I have some idea of what's going on in our finances. So I would say people who don't open the mail, they need to go to the mailbox. It's an easy rule of thumb. Also, people who don't see that mail is coming to their house. For example, if all the credit card statements and all the bank statements are going to your spouse's office or someplace else, that's a red flag. And that's something that somebody should say, I want to have all the mail redirected to our house so I can see the mail also.
Or if you have electronic delivery, you have a joint email address that the bills get sent to.
Exactly. So I would say that's one very easy issue. The other issue is make sure you have access to all the financial information by having the passwords.
Yes.
You should, as a spouse in a marriage, you should have all of the passwords to all the financial accounts. And it's not for a divorce necessarily. You should just be in the know. You should know what's happening around you and what's happening with your financial information.
Why do you think people don't do that, Lisa? Because it's amazing to me how many people have no clue of like what's going on in the with the marital money.
I think some people are really disinterested in it. Mm-hmm. Others feel that it's being handled by their spouse. Some people are uncomfortable speaking about money perhaps they're not the spouse that's out earning the money, and they don't feel that they are entitled to see the information because of that. It's also sometimes becomes a control issue where a spouse will tell you, it's none of your business. I'm not going to show it to you. I make the money. I'll deal with it. And all of those are reasons that people don't deal with their finances the proper way. It's a very abusive situation sometimes when one person is in control of the finances and really doesn't provide or won't provide the information to the other person. And that happens quite a bit. We see a lot of people who come in here who don't have any idea of what their finances are. And it's because they were not entitled to get it. Either they didn't feel entitled or they were told they were not entitled.
Yeah. And you're right. That is a form of abuse. I don't think enough people see that like that. And I think especially women, you know, we see that they're like, well, yeah, he's got control over it. And I think what's really important is knowing your rights too, Lisa, because if he's running up debt, you know, for the two of you, and I want you to tell my listeners how this works. I know it's different in every state, right? But isn't it debt that's accrued during the marriage? Isn't that joint debt?
It is.
Yeah.
It's in New York, we call it marital debt, right? Marital liabilities. And when you go to fill out your net worth statement, if you were getting divorced, it would be a marital liability. There are exceptions and there are different ways of dividing that marital liability. And one of the exceptions may be if someone was gambling or someone had a drug or alcohol issue, or there was someone who had a girlfriend or boyfriend and was spending monies on that person during the marriage. Those would all be reasons to divide it differently. Mm-hmm. And so we look for that when people come to us. But essentially, that's correct. You are accruing marital liabilities and you should understand that you are going to likely be responsible for that debt if there was a divorce. And therefore, you need to know what the debt is. You need to see the credit cards.
Right. If there's debt out there, you are going to be on the hook for half of it in all likelihood. The other thing I think that people don't realize too is that once you're married, on the flip side is that the assets become marital assets. So everything that's earned is typically it's both of you. So does it matter what somebody else is making? You're entitled to it.
That's correct. So we talk about equitable distribution, not equal distribution in New York. And that's the rule of thumb. And part of it is what are your contributions to the accumulation of assets? And of course, the accumulation of debt. And that is definitely a factor. But I often see people who come into my office and they say, well, I earned all the money. And so it's mine. And I will say, okay, well, did you have any separate property? Yes, I have all of these accounts. Well, aren't those monies that you earned during the marriage? Yes, they're in my name. So title does not mean anything basically in New York, or certainly very little. And it's really monies that are earned during the marriage are marital monies. And again, there are some exceptions as to how it will be divided. But you are correct that in a lot of cases, they will be divided on a 50-50 basis. Of course, it depends what someone's contributions are. And there are assets such as businesses, which are divided differently. They aren't necessarily a 50-50. And in fact, it's unusual to see them divided on a 50-50 basis. But certainly, you should know what those assets are. And you should be aware of them. And you should also be aware of the fact that you are, as you earn money, just because you put it in your name does not make it yours.
Yeah, that was, for me, we did a session at the financial gym a year or so back with divorce attorneys. And I think that's something that people don't realize. It's like, especially with having separate accounts and things like that. Like we have couples who are like, well, I don't want, you know, them to have, you know, say in my money or, you know, it's my money. If you're married, that's a misnomer. First of all, it's not just my money, it's our money. But I also feel like, you know, talking about divorce proofing your finances, I think the healthiest relationships that we see, because we see everything going on with couples, is that the ones that have the most open and joint accounts are actually the happiest, because everything's out in the open. You know, the spending is like, there's nothing hidden. And, you know, some people will say, well, I don't want to be told how to spend my money. And that was one of my issues, Lisa. I was like, well, I'm making a bunch of money. I don't want him to tell me how to spend it. So I have, you know, my separate account, and I just thought that was how I was living. But I always tell couples, like, you should actually want to be held accountable, right? Like, you're married to this person. Like, they should be entitled to tell you, you know, to have a say in how you're spending your money, because it's our money. You know, it's family money that you're spending. No matter how you think about how it's coming in, it's really impacting the overall family about how you're spending it. So I think accountability is a big thing. We set parameters around, like, with our couples who are really, you know, like that, we create ground rules, you know, like that they're spending allowances and things that, you know, won't be discussed. And, you know, we have a lot of negotiation around that. But I just feel like, you know, it is a misnomer to think, oh, I have a separate account, it's my separate money. It's like, well, legally, it's actually not anyway, but financially, you're better off knowing what's happening.
I agree with that. I think financial honesty and openness is really important to a marriage.
Yeah, I think that's a big issue in marriages failing. And we've seen that. We've had couples, like, always what blows my mind, we talk about this a lot at the gym, is that people are more comfortable getting physically naked with somebody than financially naked. And going back to your prenup conversation, we highly recommend couples who get engaged to have what we call a financially naked session and lay it all out there, and the good, the bad, the all of it, because you want to spend the rest of your life with this person, you're physically giving yourself to this person, you should financially share that and trust that the person is going to be okay with whatever you share with them. But it's always amazing to me when we get couples who are married 5, 10, 15 years and don't know what's going on with either person's spending. And it's interesting, the resentments and things that build up because they don't know what's happening. And then, you know, and then they start sharing everything, and it's a healthy situation, actually, instead of an unhealthy one.
I agree. And sometimes it's interesting for me to see, sometimes there is a spouse who just doesn't want to be in the know about the finances for whatever reason, and another spouse who really resents that person doesn't want to be in the know.
Yeah.
And because maybe the spending is out of control, or they're not on the same page in terms of budgets. I have seen people who actually get divorced because of that particular reason. Because a spouse, it makes it impossible to sit down and understand the finances, and doesn't want to understand that there needs to be a budget, and doesn't understand that, you know, what the earnings actually are and what that equates to and how they're going to save for retirement. So I think it's really important, as you say, to get financially naked. I think that is a great expression.
Yeah, we like it. It's true. It's funny. We do see, and there is this resentment that we see with the significant other spouse who doesn't want to be involved in, but then is spending money and they're part of the financial equation. And, you know, it's like we say, no matter how much you want to be involved or not, you're involved, whether you like it or not, especially if you're married. You know, and I always share this with people who don't want to get financially naked with somebody, especially like if you're engaged. I'm like, well, then don't marry them. Most people have sex with somebody before they marry them because they want to know what they're getting into. It should be the same with finances.
Exactly.
It's sex and money are what usually ruin a marriage, right? So, I mean, you should cover both of those bases.
Exactly right. I agree. You know, we find it sometimes where people also won't look at the tax return. So they come in and they said, well, I've signed the tax return. And I say, well, how much income was there? And they have absolutely no idea. And they don't understand that, A, if the tax return is incorrect for some reason, they may be liable for penalties and taxes and interest, et cetera. And also, it's part of your financial package. You need to know what the income is. And we see that a lot. And of course, we see, again, that financial abuse where somebody's spouse has said, just sign it. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. And they are just signing tax returns and putting those tax returns into government hands and not understanding what they've even signed.
Yeah, you should never just sign anything. And if somebody, it is abuse. If they're telling you to sign, you ask questions and they can't explain it to you, again, why are you with this person? There's a trust level that you're entitled to it, because, like we keep saying, you're also responsible for what's happening, whether or not you're paying attention or not. You're responsible for what's going on. The assets and the liabilities and the disclosures and the information and the accuracy. You can't just say, I trusted them.
That's correct. And particularly if someone has one of the spouses has a business, or there's monies that are being pulled out from 401ks or IRAs, all of those are things that would show up on a tax return. And how businesses are treating expenses, how people are treating expenses within their business, these are all things that someone could look at and understand. It's not that difficult. It really isn't. And if they looked at it and they asked questions about it and they're not getting the answers that they really need to get, then they should see an accountant or see the accountant who actually drafted the tax return and understand it, and keep asking questions until they do understand it and they're satisfied before that tax return is given to the government.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. Especially if you're with somebody with businesses, I think that's where the finances certainly get challenging. And like you said, if they're taking money from 401ks for businesses, then, you know, that's assets you don't have. You're not going to have, you did have, you were entitled to half of, and now you don't. And did you have a decision in whether or not how those were used because with the business, because that was technically half of your assets.
Exactly. And it could be, you know, just someone who's even a W-2 employee who may be pulling out monies from IRAs and 401ks prematurely. And then there's the 10% penalty. And then they're paying income taxes that they necessarily wouldn't paying if they were taking it out later after retirement. And so, again, a tax return gives you a roadmap to some of these financial questions. And I have people who come to me and all of their retirement funds and their marital retirement funds have been depleted and they had no idea. And it was all there on the tax returns had they looked. So again, if they didn't think that they understood it, no problem. Just ask the accountant then, or find another accountant who will answer the questions.
Yeah. I mean, H&R Block is like in every town, everywhere. Just walk into one of those with your return and pay the $100 or $125 to sit with somebody to explain it to you.
Exactly.
Yeah. What you're going to miss out on. Anything else, Lisa, that you feel like people should know, you know, especially if they're married? I always say, I think the biggest thing, divorce-proofing your finances, divorce-proofing anything is open, honest communication. I feel like that is across everything. That's the key to whether it's personal things or financial things in your marriage. But anything else you think people should know about?
I think people should really have honest conversations and maybe even once a month sit down together or once a quarter sit down together and have a conversation about their finances. You know, one of the things that we do, and my husband jokes about this, but he puts together a spreadsheet for me every quarter just so I can see what the finances are. Because, you know, it may be that you never get divorced, but one of you dies. And you need to be prepared. You need to know where your finances are, where your investments are. And so he does it for me to protect me, essentially, to make sure that I have all the information. And we discuss investments prior to making them so that we're both on the same page with them and why we're making them and how much money we may be investing in each particular investment. These are all conversations, I think, that are respectful of the other person and respectful of the other person's viewpoint, because these are monies that you're earning during the marriage. And this is supposed to be for both of you to be able to share someday and for your retirement and for your children, et cetera. And so these are conversations that you should be having. And I think that this taboo about talking about money and finances, that really needs to be overcome. And I think it's very important. It's good to keep things like an emergency fund so that everybody knows that in case somebody is out of work, of course, or even if you are going to go through a divorce, you have some sort of an emergency fund. You should be educating yourself, see a financial advisor, go to the financial gym. I love that, particularly since I hate working out, but I would love to go to the financial gym.
Yeah. Wine and Kleenex, Lisa, is what we have. We don't, no one has to break a sweat with us.
I would love that. That's my kind of gym.
Yeah.
So I think these are all things that people can do. I think you also have to understand what the separate property component is. A lot of times people think that what is ours is really ours. And then they get surprised during a divorce by learning that what we thought was ours was really yours that you had prior to the marriage. Again, the prenup would have helped in that because you would be educated. But there are a lot of people who do get surprised by that. And people do sometimes have the savvy to keep their separate property separate all the way through the marriage, and they will be credited with that separate property claim. And so while you may think that you have so much in the marital pot, it may not be as much as you think sometimes. You need to figure that out.
Yeah. I just think, you know, open, honest communication. I love that you and your husband meet quarterly. That's actually when we meet with our clients regularly at the gym. And we work with clients virtually too. And all my trainers say we all love working with couples because we really do feel like it's like marriage counseling and getting them on the same page. And it's funny because I've had couples with me like for over almost 5 years now, and they're clients number 2 and 3 of the gym. And it'll be 5 years this October we've been together. And they always say, they're like, we don't fight about money, you know, because like you've been in our relationship since we were dating. And, you know, we know every 3 months we're going to meet. So if we have like, you know, we'll be like, oh, should we get a car? It's like, let's just wait till we talk to Shannon. you know, because, but I think what's really important, and you talk about that you have with your husband, is having these regular check-ins, these regular money check-ins in your relationship, and for it to be a fair and comfortable environment. I think that's key. That's a lot of times, you know, with our couples that joke that we have, that we're a part of it, it's because they know it's going to be fair because we have a third party. You know, I'm the third party there that's going to keep it fair. But I think even if you don't have a third party there, it's so critical for it to feel fair on both sides, and that you both feel like your opinions and your views on your marital decisions, financial decisions, are fair. Because if you don't feel like that, that's like what we talk about, where there's some financial abuse happening. And that's not good in a relationship, especially if you want to keep it a long-term relationship.
Exactly. That's exactly correct.
Yeah. And you're married and you should be respecting each other, you know, in every way imaginable, and certainly financially. And there are definitely people, there is one part of the couple that could be more comfortable with the finances and one that's not. Or I think the important thing, and like I learned and I wanted to, and I'm glad you shared with my listeners, is that liabilities and assets, like you're both pretty much going to be on the hook for both. So it doesn't matter what's happening on either side. You both want to be informed of what's happening financially in your marriage while you're married, because there's just nothing worse than getting surprised in a negative way, definitely. But you're both responsible for what's happening. So again, talk about it.
I agree. You have to be financially responsible. That's the key.
Mm-hmm. Financial responsibility. Love it, Lisa. And now it's time for your random three questions.
Okay, let's see what they are, Shannon.
You're ready? So you're a family law attorney. If you were to be any other kind of lawyer, what law would you practice?
So I would have probably practiced criminal law because I like being in a courtroom. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy really defending someone and helping someone. So probably criminal law would have been what I would have done.
Awesome. All right. Question number two. If you were to win $1 million, what would you do with it?
What would I do with it? I probably wouldn't do anything different with it than what I do with what we already have. Mm-hmm. We would make certain investments, make that part of our goal for retirement, make sure that it's working for us. I think that that is something that both my husband and I look at all the time, is making sure that the money works for us. We do a lot of fun things. We go out, we dine out, we travel. So we really wouldn't do anything differently except perhaps make different investment.
Okay. I love it. And question number three, this is you're on death row. This is your last night on earth. What is your final meal that you want?
I want to go to San Pietro in Positano and eat the spaghetti there.
Okay. I love it.
Spaghetti Positano is what it's called. Uh-huh. And is my absolute favorite meal.
What is special about it? What is the...
It is the sauce that they make, and we have gone there for the last 22 years, and we have tried to figure out a way to make that sauce, and the tomatoes are so fresh and the ingredients so fresh that it is just spectacular.
I love it. Now I want pasta, making me hungry. Lisa, thank you so much for coming on my show and sharing your insights about all things finances, marriage, and divorce. If my listeners want to reach out to you, where can they find you?
So they can find me at Lisa Zeiderman online at Miller Zeiderman and Whitaker. And we have offices in New York and in White Plains. They can also find us at mzwnylawyers.com. They can also call us at 914-455-1000.
Awesome. And we will have links for all of that on the show notes on my blog site, Financially Blonde. And until next time, Lisa, cheers.
Cheers.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Lisa today. My biggest takeaway is to be open and honest about your finances sooner than later in any relationship you're serious about. If you can trust this person with a physical relationship, then you should certainly trust them with a financial relationship. Otherwise, the relationship is not as strong as you think it is. If you want to find the show notes for this episode, as well as how you can connect with Lisa, you can find them on my blog, Financially Blonde, and that's financially-blonde.com. And if you have any topics you'd like for me to cover on this podcast, I encourage you to email me to Shannon at finblonde.com, and that's Shannon at F-I-N-B-L-O-N-D-E
BLONDE.com or tweet to me at blonde_finance or join the private Martinis and Your Money Facebook group and let me know what you want to hear. And if you're ready to get financially naked with your significant other, I highly encourage you to make it a threesome and include one of my trainers at the financial gym. We have a number of summer promos in place right now specifically for couples, so now is the time to check us out. Go to financialgym.com to sign up for a free warm-up call to find out more. And until next time, take care.
Hey, Martinis and Your Money listeners. I love a drink and a chat with a good friend as much as the next person. And if you joined in on the fun, I hope that you're at least 21 or older, you drink responsibly, and if you did drink, please don't drink and drive. It makes for an all-around more fun time. And until next time, cheers!
Hello, you crazy last call listeners. You know I had to talk about something in the last call when I do a divorce episode. And I was thinking, I mean, I've shared about as much as I care to want to share with this group about my divorce. I do think that something should be left between me and Bill, and he's been very gracious to let me keep sharing things with you. But one thing that I realized that I was sharing with somebody recently that I realized I don't think I've shared here, and I thought would be funny, especially because it relates to how Bill and I worked out my divorce, is an interesting side note. So if you don't know, I don't think you do know. I definitely believe in reincarnation, in the fact that we've been here before a few times. Teresa Caputo, the Long Island medium, in her book actually talks about this a lot. And I actually don't think it contradicts with my Christianity. And I mean, after all, the Jesus story is the ultimate reincarnation story. And I feel like that was the teacher for understanding reincarnation. So anyway, I'm cool with all that. And my mom is definitely into that too. So she had this psychic. She still has a psychic she likes to go to on Long Island. And I was actually initially scared to talk to him because I'm actually cool with whatever happens in life. My mom talks to this guy because she has high anxiety and he makes her feel better. And I'm always like, you know what, whatever's going to be is going to be, I'm cool with it. But, I wanted to talk to him. I had the opportunity. I had a lot of things going on in my mind. And so I did feel a little bit anxious. It was actually right before Bill and I separated that ultimately led to the divorce. But I was like, you know what, let me go check him out. Actually, my main reason was I was really interested in what he could share about my previous lives, because that was something he shared with my mom. And I thought, you know, I'm actually more interested in my previous lives than what's going to happen in this life, because I have a lot of, even though I'm, you know, young at heart or whatever, I've always felt like I was an old soul. And I feel like I know things, and I know things because I've been here before. So that was actually really the main reason why I wanted to see this guy. I was curious what he was going to say about my other life. So anyway, I get there, you know, and I'm skeptical like most people. I don't want to share too much information, you know, and he was like, so, you know, having issues in your life. Something that was interesting that he said was, you know, just picked up on the fact that I was having troubles at home and in my marriage. And then I didn't really disclose anything really. I wasn't even really thinking about a divorce at the time, but he said, yeah, you and your husband are going to get divorced. It's going to be okay. It's going to be painful initially, but you know, you're going to end up being friends and, you know, it's going to be okay. And I was like, okay. And then he's like, and then he threw this out there that, just out of left field, he said, you and your husband are going to finalize your divorce in a restaurant. And that was exactly what he said. You're going to finalize your divorce in a restaurant. And, you know, you all know I love to drink and eat and all that good stuff. And I thought when he said it at the time, it didn't even strike me that weird. I just thought, okay, maybe we'll sign papers or something. Bill and I'll meet somewhere. I don't know. I didn't have too much like thought around it. I just kind of like tucked in the back of my head. Then a few months later,
the separation and things started to go into place. And you know, we definitely had a lot of challenges, as most couples do. It's not a happy time in any couple's lives. And we had some really difficult times as we were navigating through what was going to happen in next steps. And in the process of that, we had this one lunch, Bill and I, and you know, there was a lot of ugliness that was happening between the two of us that neither of us was really happy about. It just happens. And we went on this to this lunch in the middle of all the ugliness, and we actually had a really nice lunch. And I thought, oh, okay. You know, we had some margaritas, and that kind of led us to have some more civil conversations and kind of really start to think through the divorce. And I said to him, I said, you know, we should go back to Bar Taco, was the name of the place in Westchester, New York. I said, we should go back to Bar Taco and, you know, figure out this whole divorce thing. Like, let's like not get lawyers involved and back and forth. Like, let's just figure it out between you and I, like what we do with Will, you know, what we do about our finances, what we do about the house, like all this stuff. Like, let's just get some margaritas and figure it out. And he was like, okay. I said, you know, let's like take an Uber there. Let's not worry about driving. Let's just like, not until we hash it out, we'll do that. And he was like, yeah, let's do it. So literally the night before we were going, it hit me. I was like, oh my God, this is just what that psychic said. We are finalizing our divorce in a restaurant. And that is exactly what happened. The next day we took an Uber to this restaurant. He had his iPad. I had my laptop. We were like both typing up our notes, like figuring out what we're going to do, and went through like three pitchers of margaritas, some amazing tacos, some chips and guac. And that was essentially what became our divorce decree. And I crack up when I mean, how random, right? How many people would have a psychic say that to them? And that is literally what happened. And I had no idea. Now, you know, it's hysterical. So yeah, my divorce was finalized, as the psychic said, in a restaurant. And so extra side note about the psychic experience. So I did ask him about my past lives, and he said yes. He said, you know, everybody asked me this, like, you know, you weren't like Cleopatra or things like that. And I was like, yeah, I totally get it. He said, you were definitely a man in your most recent life, and you were in the military, and it was around World War II. And you were in Poland at the time. So he's like, if you go to visit Poland, certain areas of Poland will feel familiar to you. And he said, do you have any kind of scar or marking on one of your shoulders? He's like, because you were shot. And that is, you know, some kind of like the reminder of that experience. And what's so weird is in my right shoulder, I have this like weird, I don't even know. It's like a cyst thing. I have issues with it. It acts up every now and then. And it's like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's without getting really gross. It gets like pussy and like, and it's weird. And it's not like, it's weird, but it's in my right shoulder. And I was like, and it's like a hole in my shoulder. It's like bizarre. And, so anyway, that's what he said. So, and what's interestingly is that my mom and my ex mother-in-law both spoke to psychics about previous lives, and both of them said they also were around World War II and in similar areas. And what, Teresa Caputo says, the Long Island medium, is that, we know people we know in this life, we've probably known in other lives. And so I think it's interesting. And then Bill actually went to that same psychic, and sure enough, he was around in the same time too. So, and then also I was around again in like the 1500s or something like that, 1600s. I don't know. I was a guy again. And let me tell you what, I am not surprised that in my last two lives on this earth that I was a man, because I tell people all the time, I think, and especially if you heard my naked session and you know how, I don't have fear in some areas and, you know, my thought processes, I feel like I do feel like I sometimes feel like a guy, like that. And it's because, and I've said to people, I feel like this is my first time as a female, on this planet. So, and I truly actually believe that I chose to come back as a female because I do feel like it is more powerful. I do feel like I have a purpose and a plan, and I and I knew that the best way to execute it would be to come back as a female. That's my own like two cents about it. But yes, so I've been men in previous lives and I settled my divorce in a restaurant. Those two things, all those things came from a psychic experience. I haven't been back to him, but I'm interested what he would say now. But anyway, that is my last call. Cheers, everyone. Happy drinking, happy whatever you're doing right now. Thank you. Cheers.